We want to thank Owen Merricks and all his scaly friends here at the East Bay Vivarium in Berkeley, California.
We also want to thank the Scaleless Duo who help us produce this show, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, and home to the Carl Sagan Center, a multidisciplinary research institution. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the episode Venom Diagram. I'm Molly Bentley.
I'm Seth Shostak.
And if you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, well, you'll find lots of episodes in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because the ether just knocks you out, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page. To reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise, that always helps, then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org. I'm just going to check in with the fate of the mice over here.
Ooh, I think it might be unfortunate. No sign of the mouse.
Unless he's that bump in the middle of that python.
Yeah, there could be that bulge there. Then again, it could be just middle age spread.
And you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.FM. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Be there. Or be square.
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to The Magic of Radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Last month, Mr. Alex Guevara gave an eye-opening presentation at the Michigan MUFON meeting in Burton, Michigan, entitled The Forces and Reasons Behind UFO Secrecy. So I asked him to be our guest today to share his findings with our listeners. So Alex is an MBA in business from Michigan State University and has been working in the medical industry for 30-plus years. In 2011, after hearing a story of a UFO sighting from his father, he began to seriously investigate the UFO phenomenon. He was shocked and surprised to see the mountain of credible evidence that had surfaced surrounding the subject. Since then, he has met with several key UFO investigators and activists, including Richard Dolan, Stephen Bassett, Stanton Friedman, Travis Walton, and Lynn Kaitai, all of whom have been a guest on this show in the past. He has spent the last 6 years scouring the internet looking for the best available high-level witness testimony and official documented evidence. And over the past 3 years, Alex has been writing ebooks on the UFO topic as well as hosting regular Skywatch outings. So let's welcome Alex Guevara to the show. Hello, Alex.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me on the show today. I appreciate the time you're giving me.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your the evidence you've collected. You heard your father talk about UFO sighting, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how I fell into this. I've never given the topic really a whole lot of thought. I think pretty much like most people, up until you have that aha moment, you pretty much write it off as, you know, what you see in the tabloids, that there's really nothing to it. And I thought about it every once in a while during my life, but especially in the propulsion and energy technologies. But again, I never gave it much serious thought. Well, my father had been telling me this story my whole life about when I was 1 year old living in Puerto Rico with him, my brother, and my mother. He was a captain in the U.S. Army. And one Sunday, coming back from the beach, it was mid-afternoon, something caught his eye in the sky. And he looked up, and there were four black disc-shaped craft flying in formation directly overhead, making absolutely no sound at all. That sighting was confirmed in a city on the other side of the island called Ponce, where the story appeared in their newspaper, where several people had seen it as well. I had heard the story from my father numerous times, and again, never really gave him much thought, but for some reason, about 7 years ago, when he told me this story again, he's getting quite old now, he's 81, I thought that maybe it warranted a little bit of research. And you know, it's amazing when you take the time to actually put aside your preconceptions and what you've been taught, and just do a Google search on UFO evidence. You begin to uncover stones, and one stone leads to more questions, which leads to more stones, which leads to more questions. And in a very short time, probably 2-3 weeks, I had gotten to the point where I realized that not only is there something very, very important going on, but there's also the other side of the story is the human story. The human story actually, to me, is more fascinating than the ET story. I mean, the fact that the evidence suggests there's been ET visitation to our planet, certainly as long as human beings have been on our planet, and that's and we've been keeping records for 5,000-6,000 years, but most likely a lot longer than that. You know, when you think of the age of the universe being 15 billion years and our planet only being about 4 billion, there's a lot of room in there for other sentient civilizations to evolve and reach out to the stars and explore. I was amazed and quite shocked, actually, at the witness testimony that had been accumulating over the decades, certainly since the 40s.
Right.
And the documents that have been uncovered, lots of documents, not just leaked documents or hacked documents, but, you know, freedom of information request documents, certain cases, the trace case evidence that's been reported. So, yeah, it's been a... It's been a real eye-opening and a mind-expanding journey for me, and I'm very glad that I went through it, because I think it gives me a much more realistic perspective on our world today.
Yeah, I often mention J. Allen Hynek was a skeptic until they, and that's the reason they hired him to work on Project Blue Book. And when they put him in Project Blue Book, well, he had to investigate the evidence. And once he had to investigate the evidence, he became a believer and spent the rest of his life trying to convince others that this is a real phenomenon. So
yeah, I like J. Allen Hynek. I think he's certainly one of the central figures in this whole thing.
Right.
And I think he's a perfect example of what happens if you just take the time to take a sober look at the evidence. I mean,
right.
Even in spite of the fact that there is a huge effort by the powers that be to seed the evidence with disinformation.
Mm.
Even though that is certainly there, it's filled with disinformation and all the techniques used for redirecting thought. Even if that's there, as long as you take the time to soberly look at the credible evidence, you can't get past the fact that there is something just incredible going on. I mean, I think probably one of the most stellar pieces of evidence is the stuff that Nick Hastings has been doing in the disarming of the nuclear missiles in silos during the 1960s. I mean, that's
Robert Hastings?
Witness testimony there with Robert Salas and others, I think alone should open people's eyes that, hey, not all is as it appears here on planet Earth.
Yeah, are you talking about Robert Hastings?
I'm sorry, Robert Hastings.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
I thought maybe there was another one, you know?
What's that?
I thought maybe there was another one, a Nick that was looking into
it. No, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I was thinking of somebody else.
That's right.
Robert Hastings, yep, Robert Hastings. And then Robert Salas, of course, the military witness.
Right. Maybe you're thinking of Nick Pope. Are you thinking of Nick Pope?
No, I know Nick Pope too. The guy from England.
Right.
He was on the Ministry of Defense.
Right.
Yep. I saw him actually a few years back at the Contact in the Desert event. But I think the takeaway is this, and this is where I've come to, and where I think we need to get past the idea that we need to find, you know, if we could just find that one stellar piece of evidence that somehow miraculously we're going to convince people that this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Donald Keough in the 50s that actually said, even at that time, that the evidence was overwhelming. And I think I heard him on a talk show, recorded talk show from that time where he was talking about the pilot witnesses and so forth, the military witnesses, and stating that even the evidence at that time was overwhelming. And I think of all the things that have been collected since then, Dr. Stephen Greer has just an incredible collection of witness testimony videos on his site. I think the new site is S Disclosure on YouTube.
S SETI, isn't it?
It's funny, YouTube, he had a great website called CSETI Web, but
CSETI,
YouTube took it down at some point. Just
really?
A few weeks ago, I was actually quite shocked to see they censored it, but he has another site now. I think it's called S Disclosure, where you can see all those witness testimony videos.
Yeah.
I think if anybody wants to get a good start to see what's going on with the whole UFO phenomenon, personally, I like to call it the OT phenomenon, which is other terrestrial, because at this point, it's not just people from out there. It's there's evidence of interdimensional travel. There's some evidence of perhaps time travel. There's evidence that perhaps there are beings currently existing on our own planet that we're unaware of. I don't think we can really state it's one thing or another. It can be multiple things all at once.
So you think it's a little bit of everything, right?
I think it certainly could be, yeah. I think I heard a video a while back by Paul Hellyer, the former Prime Minister of Defense of Canada, where he was saying that, I think it was back in the 60s or 70s, that even then they were aware of numerous species visiting the planet. I think he had said six or seven.
Oh, there's a lot more.
I think this is where we're stuck today. We're kind of stuck in Groundhog Day. I think that's probably the best analogy where, you know, the powers that be have got the whole UFO, the people that are interested in the topic, so caught up in this idea that, you know, we need to collect, we need to keep collecting evidence, and we need to specialize in particular areas, and, you know, and you just got to find that right piece of evidence, and it's going to change everything. Well, we are so way past that. I mean, we are. I don't think a single human being, if they were to sit down and try to read every bit or piece of evidence out there on the subject now, could even do it in a lifetime.
No.
There's so much.
No, that's right.
It's overwhelming. I mean, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of books, you know, documents, videos, the witness testimonies, it just goes on and on. I think we need to move past that, and we really need to start just accepting that it's true, first of all, that obviously something's going on and it's being suppressed. The information is being suppressed. And the conversation really needs to move to, you know, does something need to be done about it? I think that's the very first question that people have to ask themselves.
Is, like what?
Is it important that something is done about the suppression of that information?
Oh, now, the suppression.
What's that?
I thought you meant that something had to be done about the UFO phenomenon. I said, "What? Like what?" But it's the suppression.
Yeah, and no, not the phenomenon itself. I'm saying something had to be done about the suppression of the information.
Right.
And I think people have to make that decision first. Is like, does it matter? You know, does it matter that the information is being suppressed? And that draws us into a much bigger topic of secrecy in general. I think few people would argue, you know, that the world has gotten to a point where there's mass surveillance going on now. We know about that from guys like Edward Snowden and Julian Assange of WikiLeaks.
Right.
We've seen a lot of leaked documents that are showing us that, you know, political structures around the world are not necessarily what they purport themselves to be.
Mm-hmm.
We've certainly seen a lot of evidence of the suppression of new energy technologies, and we can talk about guys like Eugene Mallove. We can talk about, well, going all the way back to Tesla, and there's been numerous ones since then.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned this. Mallove is his name?
Yeah, Eugene Mallove.
What about him?
Well, Eugene Mallove, and there's a great video on Dr. Greer's site where Eugene Mallove is talking about this incident, but I believe this was in the late 90s while the Pons-Fleischmann experiments were going on about on cold fusion, and he was at MIT. He was working with some of the paperwork that was coming out of the experiment, and the documents showed that cold fusion actually worked. It was generating more out than in, and there was a lot of excitement. And a day or two later, he had come back, and somebody within the department, I believe it was, had changed the documentation, you know, altered it, made it fraudulent to show that the experiment produced a negative result. Eugene Mallove, I think he was on the warpath about trying to get that information out for years, and I believe it was in the early 2000s he was murdered. Now, whether the murder's connected to that incident, I really don't know. I think there's a lot of speculation that it possibly was.
Yeah.
But that's just one example. There have been others. There's been a gentleman during the, I believe it was the 80s, developed a water-powered car. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Instead of gas?
Do you know his name?
Do I know?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But I know where you're talking about. Could put water in the gas tank and what happened to him?
Yeah, same it was thing? A similar situation, and I hope the name comes to me. I don't have my notes here in front of me, but he was I believe he was in the mid 80s. He was on the news. They were talking about he invented a carburetor that could divide water into its base elements of hydrogen and oxygen, and then burn the hydrogen as fuel. And he also ended up dying right after he had a meeting with the some people from the United Nations. So just very strange stuff, you know.
They're just not done selling us fossil fuel, are they?
Well, you know, and that's funny. It's like you start to realize when you get into this UFO the UFO discussion that it's really tied to a lot of other things that go on our planet, and it pulls you in a lot of directions. You start realizing how secrecy is maintained. you know, what are the pillars of control? We know the banking system, certainly the energy system. The media is a major pillar of control. Anybody who watched the last election knows that. We see many departments of our own government that are being used to really restrict certain things. The Environmental Protection Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Energy. I mean, even down to the Patent Office. These things are being used as methods of basically restricting and controlling.
Well, you had you showed a little video at your presentation at the MUFON meeting about JFK on secrecy. Now, it's rumored that JFK was assassinated because he was about to expose the UFO secrets. What are your views on that?
I think that is just one of several things that he was probably assassinated for. I think there's a lot of information that talks about him wanting to splinter the CIA into a million pieces. He wanted to end the Federal Reserve. He had a lot of ideas that he wanted to do. Personally, I think there were a lot of them are very good and actually needed to be done then and probably need to be done today. I think Dr. Greer's revelation of that particular document that came out about Marilyn Monroe showing her connection to Kennedy and how she had to be silenced because of the pillow talk that was going on between her and the Kennedys about the men from outer space. I think Kennedy had a lot of good intentions, but he just was never able to make it happen because the word today we're using is the deep state or the shadow government. There was a great revelation just this past week of a CIA whistleblower talking about the whole structure of that. I think those elements have been in place and have been coming up in the government for many years. We know that the CIA was started in 47, literally right after the Roswell event.
Right.
And I believe it was probably one of the catalyzing events that caused the creation of that.
And the NSA.
Following Majestic 12 and a lot of the other groups that were in charge of research and secrecy and so forth.
And the NSA was started right after that, too.
Yeah, I think Richard Dolan actually said that, you know, that the UFO phenomenon wasn't the only thing that contributed to the big push for, you know, these control groups and secrecy, but it certainly contributed a lot to it. And I think a lot of it had to do with control of the technologies that were beginning to be acquired. I mean, we have evidence now going back to at least 42, the Battle of Los Angeles event, where ships came in over the ocean. The military fired like 1,400 shells in the sky and didn't hit anything, and then they claimed it was a weather balloon, and yet people on the ground died because of numerous reasons.
Right. But we
know from a leaked memo and other witness testimony that's come out since then that there were actually two craft recovered, that one had fallen in the ocean and one in the mountains, and that I believe it was the FBI and the Army were fighting over who had access to it.
Yeah.
So we already start to see this internal battling going on between power parties, I like to call them. You know, we think of our government as a unified organization, but I don't think it really is at certain levels. I think, you know, the military has their little power corner and the intelligence agencies have theirs. And
I think helter skelter would be a better description of our government.
Yeah, it's interesting. The speech you mentioned, I think there's actually several key pieces of information people need to know so they can understand the big picture here. And one certainly is the Eisenhower speech of the military-industrial complex in 61. And then as soon as he left office and Kennedy came in, I think the one you're referring to is the speech on secret societies. I really like that one because it really talks about the infiltrating nature of the powers that be in our world and the powers basically being centralized within elite families. People think in terms of governments and races and things like that, but it's really not that anymore. Richard Dolan would tell you that countries really don't exist anymore. The power centers are really within within very, very elite globalist families. And what we've seen over time is basically an infiltration. And if you listen to Kennedy's speech, you'll hear him talk about how they work. And it's been a steady progressive infiltration into all these systems that matter, whether it's military, whether it's intelligence, whether it's politicians, whether it's the media, whether it's the banking system, certainly energy systems, all these different systems in education, scientific. It's been a steady infiltration where what we view today as reality really is not. It's more of a contrived view. Some of it's true. In fact, a lot of it may be true, but some of the very, very critical information is being left out.
Right. That's the problem.
And I think that's the most dangerous thing, is that people cannot make good decisions about life in general if we're not given all the information.
Yeah. Lies and half-truths.
And so, you know, again, we fast forward to today and we say, okay, you know, what does it mean? And that's the real question that I struggle today with, is, okay, we know that the, you know, the picture that has been painted of reality by the powers that be is not really true. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. And people live in it and they accept it as reality. And the question really breaks down to, does it matter? You know, and that's really the question I ask myself every day, is, does it matter? I mean, some people's lives are great. A lot of people's lives are not. I mean, the middle class in the U.S. is being wiped out. The average income of the American earner now is dropped below $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the statistics that people need to know. I ask myself, does it matter? And in my mind, the answer is yes, it matters. It matters because it's impossible for me to believe that we live in a day and age with such incredible technology and advancements, and yet the quality of life of the average person seems to be falling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what does it mean? Well, it means that if it does matter, that people that care, they need to do something about it. And certainly the very first thing people need to do that care is to share the information, to get past the idea that, you know, these topics are untrue, that they're conspiracy theories, that, you know, UFO people are nuts. They're just not. We're just not. I mean, this is stuff that really matters, because what people don't understand is that if this information gets out into the public, and with the word we use is disclosure, and the truth comes out about what we know of extraterrestrial visitation, this is actually one of Dr. Greer's favorite topics. If the truth comes out about extraterrestrial visitation, and then the flood of questions that follows, oh, wow, how do they get here? Well, you know, they use exotic propulsion technology and energy sources that come from zero-point energy, you know, from the quantum vacuum, that you can get almost limitless amounts of energy at very, very cheaply, and even more importantly, very cleanly. Mm-hmm. You know, and if that information comes out, first of all, of course, the petrol fuel cartels are done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you know that those are the biggest business on the planet, you can understand why they don't want that information coming out.
I hear you.
And I think that's what people need to know. They need to understand that this isn't just an ooh-ah topic, you know, wow, that's interesting. The truth about this getting out will change everybody's lives forever for the better.
Yeah.
And no doubt about it.
I think that's what the powers that be is trying to avoid. Is that change?
Well, they lose their position of power, and I think that's the biggest thing. One of the things I said on Sunday was that we're all operating in fear mode, and it's not just us or them; it's both sides. The small group of people in power who have been in power for certainly centuries, if not longer, generations of families. I mean, the things that they have had to do to maintain their power. I think if people really, really saw the gravity of it, you know, the heinous crimes that have been committed, yeah, they would be appalled. Yeah. And I think, you know, the people that are in power know that. And so I think they've gotten themselves to the point where I don't think that they even think that, you know, letting this stuff out is even an option. Now, You know, that so on their side, they're extremely fearful, even though they control everything and own everything and know everything. And
But there's another
big side of fear that we have to talk about, and that's the fear of the general population. Mm-hmm. The general population fears those in control, and they have a right to, because we know, based on the small amount of information we've been able to gather through WikiLeaks and other leaks and other data that's come out, freedom of information, and of course all the UFO information, we know that not all is as it seems. We know that there's things going on that are being done.
All right.
You know, we know there's major political corruption going on. We know all these things. And mm-hmm. so you have a big side of fear in the general population as well. So the two sides, the fear is building. Mm-hmm. And what I try to tell people is that we can't keep going down this road of building up fear on both sides, because that is going to burst. And we're going to transition to whatever it is that comes next with this technology and open ET contact. We're going to get there one way or another. There's stopping that.
That's right.
The question is, how are we going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to do it the way we've done it in the past, which is total global upheaval and world war and fighting over power? Or are we going to bring this discussion out in the open, start talking about it, and figure out a way that we can all peacefully transition to where we're going? I really think that's the key.
I hope it's the latter.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I hope it's the latter. But I need to take a break right now to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 on the radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Alex Guevara. He is started out as a UFO skeptic and is now a researcher in the subject, because he researched. And if any of our listeners out there are sitting on the fence as to whether the topic is real or not, take a leaf from Mr. Guevara's book and start investigating open-mindedly. Speaking of books, you've written e-books, haven't you?
Well, you know, the whole book thing is kind of funny. There's like I said, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of UFO books out there. I don't think books today is the way to go. And the reason being is, by the time you get done writing a book, a lot of the information has changed, and a lot of the subjects have been already written on. What I do is I keep it real simple. I each year, at the end of each year, I publish it's an internet reference guide, and I put together all the best information I can find on the web, and I put it in chronological order, starting back as far as you can go, starting with ancient history, evidence of extraterrestrial visitation, working my way up all through the 1800s, the 1900s. Things really start to happen in, you know, around the end of the 30s, early 40s. And every year I update it. Of course, I have to check all the links, because a lot of links go bad. Anybody that works on the internet knows. And I'm always constantly adding to it, revising it, adding the latest year, everything I've picked up in the latest year. And then I republish the book at the end of each year. You can find the book if you go to my website, which is www.etcare.org. That's etcare.org. You can find a link there to the book on Amazon. There's a link there to join my newsletter. I've got my YouTube site there where we put some of our Skywatch videos on. I'm also starting to produce some videos from the book to give a more of a visual story and really just focus on the critical things.
I saw your Skywatch video. Is that your Skywatch video or someone else's, or what?
Which one?
The one on ET Care.
So the one that's showing the orbs?
Yeah, well, look like little stars that are moving around.
Yeah. Actually, I filmed that at a Skywatch we did this past summer. And I think it's important to discuss the Skywatch thing. I like to go out and watch it and look at the stars, and I like to watch things. I think if people need to be reassured that there is something going on, then going out and watching the sky at night is a great idea, because if you go out often enough and long enough, you're going to see things that you can't explain. It's just the way it is. And there's a lot of stuff there that's explainable. You've got, of course, stars and meteors and, you know, satellites and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you will see things that you can't explain if you just spend the time to get out at night and stay out there for a while. Yeah. But here's the point. Mm-hmm. I don't do that because I personally need more evidence. I mean, the evidence the evidence of the witness testimony, the documents, the trace case evidence, there's way more there than you're ever going to need to be convinced. I think the sky watching is great because it gives you an opportunity to get people together of like mind to go out and watch and, you know, talk and meet other people. There's a big push now. People are doing something called CE5, where they this was coined by Dr. Stephen Greer, where people go out in groups at night and they meditate and they attempt to use meditative techniques to join kind of a universal consciousness and connect with other beings. I think that's all great. I think it doesn't really matter what brings you to this topic as long as you come to it.
Right.
Come to it, embrace it, look at the evidence, share the evidence, and let's start openly talking about it. We need to start openly talking about, okay, we know it's real, we know it's there. What can we do? I mean, what can we do to bring these two fearful parties together? That is, I think, the real key. You know, what can we do to bring these two parties together? I think back, if people have studied this phenomena, they know that back in the 50s, we now have multiple points of evidence that show that President Eisenhower met with some extraterrestrials.
Right.
Had actual meetings with extraterrestrials.
Right.
It's my understanding that, from what I understand, he was offered the opportunity to help human beings grow spiritually or grow in ways that we need to grow to become less animal-like and more spiritual. But I guess they were turned down at that time.
Well, I've heard all kinds of things about that. One, the ET had offered technology in return for allowing citizens to be abducted, but they went and they're abducting more than they said they would, and all kinds of different things. But I think that there's some truth to the the story that Eisenhower did at one time meet with them. Holloman Air Force Base, that's where he met.
Yeah, that's where we've got the evidence from, the Holloman Air Force Base. Now, I think you're referring to a different meeting, and I think that was called the Griotta Treaty about the, I like to call it the abductees for technology deal, kind of like the, hostages for, arms for hostages deal,
right,
the Iran-Contra thing.
Right.
The Griotta Treaty, I've looked at it. I'm not sold on the idea that it's real, though I do believe there is something to the abduction phenomena. Now, if you talk to Dr. Stephen Greer, he'll tell you that it's all human-driven, done by humans as a scare and control tactic, and I think that's certainly possible. However, some of the witness testimony, it's pretty difficult to deny that it looks like there's some type of hybridization program going on.
Yeah.
So. I'm not decided one way or another, and I think the other thing that's important for people to understand is that it doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. I mean, it can be multiple things happening at once. You know, you've got Roger Lear's evidence of alien of implants going in that are emitting signals, and so I don't know. These days I try not to get mired down in specific bits of evidence, because it's like, you know, losing sight of the forest for the trees. I think you come to the point where you realize, okay, it's true. Something's going on. You know, what specifically it is? Well, I call it the iceberg theory, where the stuff that's been exposed to daylight that we have access to is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
You know, we're seeing this little tip of the, we're seeing an ice cube floating on the ocean, and we're saying, oh, wow, that's amazing. And yet underneath that is this mountain of information that is unseen. And there are people, human beings on this planet that know,
you know,
what's going on. And I think that is the most important thing, is there is a group of human beings on this planet that have been reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology from all these crash retrievals going all the way back to Roswell, possibly sooner. We know that dish-shaped craft were brought back from Nazi Germany during Operation Paperclip in 45. We've got witness testimonies stating that. Where the Germans got their technology, hard to say. There's some stories there of, guess what, meditation. You know, a certain group meditating and were supposedly received information on how to build these things. There's some talk of them downing some type of disc-shaped craft using initial designs of radar. We don't, somebody might know, or if somebody knows the information, I'd certainly like to hear it. I haven't been able to find anything specific.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think the key point is, if we look at the broad picture, the broad stroke here is that there is a group of human beings on this planet. Richard Dolan would tell you they're called the breakaway society or the breakaway civilization. Mm-hmm. That are today, and here we are 70 or almost 80 years since these things first began to occur, that they're sitting on some incredibly advanced exotic technologies that have been retrieved from non-Earth locations.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've been doing with those technologies, well, it's hard to say. I think some of it has been released into the public. If we listen to Colonel Corso's testimony, he'll tell you that he was the guy that brought the stuff out on the computer chip and on fiber optics, on night vision, lasers.
Mm. Day after
certainly all in public domain today. But what we're not seeing is the energy generation and propulsion technologies. And, probably because, you know, the zero-point energy generation technologies would put the energy cartels out of business. So, you know, you're seeing collusion here between the powers that be to really keep things in control.
Right, right.
The important thing people need to know, though, is if there is this group of people on this planet, I believe that they're here somewhere. Don't know exactly where, whether it's underground bases. There's a lot of talk these days about some big project going on in Antarctica. If you listen to Linda Moulton Howe, she'll tell you about, you know, what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
If these people are here and they're advancing well ahead of the rest of the general population, I believe that presents a danger to our world, a dramatic danger. And if you're looking for a reason to get involved in this topic and to get this information out, especially if you have children, I believe it's important to get this information out and let people understand that, you know, any time in the past, if you look at history, where an advanced human civilization encountered a more backward civilization, the lesser civilization was always destroyed.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they're afraid of.
When the conquistadors and the conquerors went to South America, they destroyed Indian populations. When the Europeans came to America, we destroyed the Indian population. It's an old story.
Yeah, well, that's what we're worried about. Some scientists are worried about, but at the same time, that's us. That is us. That's we humans, okay? What is saying that it's going to be the same way with E.T. and us, you know? I think that E.T. is so far advanced that, you know, if they wanted to destroy us, they would have done so already and we wouldn't be having this conversation, am I right?
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I have this conversation with my brother often. He says the same thing. He says, oh, no, if E.T. came here, we'd just be wiped out. And I think we're missing something. As human beings, we always tend to think of things in terms of our own level of intelligence and understanding and
so
forth.
That's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to kind of step out of ourselves and realize that, you know, in terms of where we are on the evolutionary scale of sentient beings, you know, we're literally just crawling out of the swamp here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just crawling our way into sentient existence. we're just really, really becoming very self-aware now. And we know that we have many primitive instincts. And so the first thing we think is that ET is like us or, you know, interdimensionals or whatever. I think that's a big mistake because I think a big part of evolution is the ability to rise above, you know, violence and fear and anger and all these things and really live a more logical, peaceful existence. Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right that if extraterrestrials, which could potentially be billions of years more advanced than we are, I mean, just the evidence from the 60s of the orange balls of light coming in over the nuclear Minuteman missile bases and disarming the missiles. I mean, if that's just one simple example of their technology, I think if they wanted us gone, they would just wipe us out from space. I mean, I don't think we are a threat at all. And you know, the other thing people need to realize is that, you know, if there is some visitors coming to Earth, and there's a trillion galaxies out there, and each galaxy has hundreds of billions of stars, and you know, many of those stars have planets that are habitable, probably have life. We have to realize that human beings, the civilization on this planet, although we may be unique in certain ways, we are certainly not rare. And if there are other highly advanced civilizations visiting us, they're traveling all over the place. They're visiting planets where life is just beginning. You know, they're visiting planets where there's people that have, where there's beings that have similar development as them, and there's everything in between.
Yeah, and Hollywood doesn't help any with, you know, everything's Independence Day or that type of scenario when it comes to ET coming to Earth.
You know, Hollywood's an interesting thing. I think we have to look at Hollywood as an extension of the media.
Yeah.
And I think we have to look at the media as an extension of the defined narrative. I mean, there's a narrative, and the narrative is there's no evidence of extraterrestrial life. There's no such thing as, you know, zero point energy. Those guys over there are bad guys. We're the good guys. You know, we're pushing freedom and democracy around the world and so on and so forth. That's the narrative.
Yeah.
I think when we talk about Hollywood and the media, let's talk about them together. We know that there are intelligence agency plants in a lot of that. The media, certainly, we know there's intelligence agency operatives. We know that agendas for movies are suggested and offered by outside influencers that are pushing a certain narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I think a good example of media infiltration and influence is Anderson Cooper. I mean, I like Anderson Cooper. I think he seems like a nice guy, but if people don't know his background, they don't know that, you know, here's a guy. Got a top position at CNN, and yet prior to working for CNN, never had any experience in newscasting. But yet he did 2 summers of internship at the CIA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
When people start to see, you know, the story behind the story,
right?
You start to realize that the information is really it's controlled, mm-hmm. it's skewed,
right.
And so you have to be able to. People have gotten so comfortable of clicking on the TV and letting information just be fed to them and told what to think and what is right and wrong, that when you try to challenge people to think on their own, a lot of people get defensive.
Yeah.
We've forgotten how to reason, how to think logically, how to filter good information from bad information.
And while we're on
these are all important skills.
While we're on the subject of possible ET bringing war to us, which I don't think is going to happen, the Disclosure Project's Carol Rosen has claimed that she was told by Wernher von Braun about a false flag event involving a faked alien invasion. Do you think that that'll happen? Or do you think that's in the process of happening?
Well, I think Carol Rosen's testimony is certainly one of the pivotal testimonies in all this. And the reason I say that is because, and again, whenever you talk about any bit of evidence, We always have to line it up with other evidence that's come before and come after to really pull out the credibility of the evidence. So mm-hmm. I always tie the Carol Rosen testimony to the Secret Society's testimony by Kennedy, to the Eisenhower testimony about the military-industrial complex, because that's really the heart of Carol's testimony, to Operation Paperclip, because she's really giving the dying testimony of Wernher von Braun, and then followed by the series of world events that line up with what she's talking about. So Carol Rosen says, Wernher von Braun in his dying years told me that the future was going to be full of fictitious enemies that the military-industrial complex was going to use to justify putting weapons in space and, of course, spending trillions upon trillions of dollars in weapons and all this. And, she named specifically the way they were going to go is going to be the Russians and the commies, followed by terrorists, rogue nations, asteroids, and finally a fake alien invasion. Well, we're at about 90% truth of that rollout of fake enemies. Mm-hmm. So, she's hit it on the nail, and this was testimony from, I think, 74, was Carol Rosen. So, yes, I think Carol Rosen has something to say there, because if you understand that the people that are in control, the elites, have been reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology as well as developing highly exotic technology on our own concurrently with this other technology, there is certainly stuff that we don't see every day. And I'm talking not even in the military. There's stuff that they're sitting on that nobody's ever seen. And so can they pull it off? Can they pull off a fake alien invasion? Absolutely. Hmm. All they have to do is use crafts that have been developed and not seen two, three generations ahead of where we are now, and no one would know. The question is, though, is, okay, what would be the reason? What would be the catalyst that would trigger that? Well, in my mind, it would be when they felt they did not have any other option and that they were losing their battle on all other fronts.
Hmm.
Now, are we there yet? I don't know. Uh-huh. The other fronts being, banking, certainly energy, this war on terrorism, which seems to be winding down.
Mm-hmm. General MacArthur, Douglas MacArthur, after World War II, said that the next war would be against aliens from other planets.
He did know about ET visitation. I believe that.
Yeah. So was that part of that that plan that Wernher von Braun knew about?
That's a piece of history. That's a piece of history I'm not aware of. He did say that, and I don't know whether he said it because he felt it was true, whether he was aware of extraterrestrial visitation and just assumed, but keep in mind that he was a military guy, so right. He tend to have a military mindset. Right. Or is it possible that, this agenda, this agenda of developing fake enemies was present? And I don't know enough about that era. That information may actually be out, but probably a guy like Stephen Greer would know, or maybe Richard Dolan, because he did a lot of research into that.
Well,
I personally don't know the answer to that question.
It was around the same time, and it's basically the same scenario. We're going to have End of Second World War, yeah, when they brought von Braun over, Operation Paperclip, brought him over, and he told Carol Rosen, it's all a lie. It's going to be a false flag operation, and all to justify space.
He told Carol that in 74, I think.
Yeah, it was in the 70s, and she repeated it, of course, ever since then. But in the Disclosure Project was 2001, May of 2001.
Yeah, and so MacArthur, if he was saying that in 45, he would have known about the Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
He would have known about the vehicles brought back from Germany,
mm-hmm.
and possibly where the Nazis got that information.
Mm-hmm.
He would have known about the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
He would have had a lot of information already, and as to why he was saying that, I don't know his true motivations. Was he part of the future plan to, you know, to spark all these fake enemies, or did he actually believe that you know, these visitors were a threat? It's very possible that too. There just wasn't a lot of information, I believe, at that time to really understand it. I think there was a unit produced, or there was a group formed before MJ-12. I forget what it's called, the phenomenon unit, I forget the name. Some of the history just slips me, but there was a lot of activity going on there to really start to try to get their arms around what was going on.
Yeah, the common denominator there between Von Braun and Douglas MacArthur was that they knew of extraterrestrial visitation. They were aware.
Yeah, Von Braun knew too. Yeah, I did see some information about that Von Braun was aware.
Yeah, and back then they pretty much came out and stated to that fact. But then they asked the Brookings Institute to take a look at it, and how would the public react? And they said, "Oh, we think that's a bad idea."
Yeah, there was an era there for a while from 40 to, I think it was right around 60 or so, where a lot of that information seemed to be coming out pretty strongly about new technology and visitation and so forth. And then you're right, it was shut down.
Yeah.
You literally could talk about this evidence for hours upon hours. There's just so much. It's overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I try to focus on, okay, what does it all mean? Where are we now? And what, if anything, should be and could be done to change the course of where we're going? Because that really is the challenge for today's generation. How do we change the direction of where we're going? Because the direction we're going now is really a terrible one. I mean, we have seen a complete corruption and castration of our politicians, where they are pretty much powerless to do anything. And in most cases, you know, their loyalties have been bought by private interests. They really don't represent the people anymore.
Well, do you think that if one country or another fired off a nuclear weapon, E.T. would step in and stop it?
You know, that's an interesting question. We go back to the evidence from the 60s. Again, Robert Hastings, he did a documentary. I think it was last year it came out, maybe the year before, mm-hmm. with all these witnesses. If the, you know, if ET or others had the technology then to disable our missiles in their silos, and there was another incident that's documented where a test missile was fired off a Big Sur, and then the warhead was knocked off the test missile by an incoming unidentified object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had the technology then, you really wonder whether or not they would. And if they would, you know, why would they? They're obviously in the 60s, they were testing to make sure they had the ability to do so. But under what circumstances would they step in? You know, it's interesting to see that, you know, the only use of nuclear technology was 45 in Japan.
Right.
And since then, there haven't been any use. Have visitors mapped out where all the missiles are around the world? Would they plan to step in?
I don't know.
I think certainly they have the technology to do it.
Yeah, I don't think would it they matters. Do it?
I don't know.
I don't think it matters whether or not they used it against... one country uses it against the other. This above ground testing of nuclear weapons, if ET is out there, they can see that, and that that radiation is affecting the environment, and they can see that. They're aware of that, and even our nuclear. You know, Chernobyl. They had to be aware of Chernobyl. All of this nuclear radiation that's going on all over
the
world.
It's a dirty technology. It's very dirty technology.
Yeah.
Nobody should convince us that nuclear energy is the answer, because it's not.
It can't be.
No, and neither is, quite honestly, neither is solar panels, neither is hydro, neither is, you know, any of this stuff that people are touting as clean. It's that they don't understand that the, you know, the cost per generation of kilowatts is just exorbitant. It's just not the way to go, especially when we know, I mean, if you want to look at energy technologies, there's some incredible stuff that you can already look at. Dr. John Searle has a Searle Effect generator. He's a guy from Australia that he's been touting here now for several years, that basically draws atmospheric electrons out of the air, runs them through this circular generator, and it creates electricity. It's literally creating energy out of thin air. You know, I mean, atmospheric electrons, right? You can Google that. Google, anybody wants to see that, just Google electrons ride the magnetic wave. That's a great video. Wow. There's Dr. Keshe out of Iran who's got the Keshe coil and plasma generators that are also zero-point type energy devices. Yeah. We've got a guy in Argentina who's got a magnetic motor called the Torian 3 that that basically generates electricity using some type of special organization of magnets and different polar arrangements. It's also the interesting thing is a lot of these are circular devices that look just like UFOs. You've got the QEG, the quantum effect generator. There's numerous videos on the web where people are showing the applications and use of that device.
Alex, we're running
Dr.
out of time.
Searle actually was working with something called levity discs back in the 60s, where they're basically electrogravitic anti-gravity discs.
Okay,
and
Alex,
look at his videos.
I hate to cut you off, but we are out of time. But I appreciate you coming on, and I hope we can do this again sometime, because, like you say, we can spend an awful lot of time going over the evidence. Am I right?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to WHFR, Dearborn.